Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we just hit a milestone, and it's a horrific one. We talk about that, as well as some new vaccine news and a new study that shows that lockdowns did nothing, that they actually did more harm than good. Fortunately, we've been saying that for quite some time. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, take out your podcast app, type in Charlie Kirk Show, and make sure you're subscribed. Get your friends to do the same. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, we are expanding rapidly at Turning Point USA. Go to tpusa.com, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win the American culture war. That's tpusa.com, tpusa.com. And start a high school chapter or start a college chapter today at tpusa.com. At Turning Point USA, we are focusing on passing down American values, the Constitution, liberty, separation of powers, consent to the governed, independent judiciary to future generations. tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. We have just reached a milestone, and it's not a good one. It's a story that our leaders in both political parties can take blame for. National debt tops $30 trillion. We have become a debtor nation that no longer cares about the amount of debt we are passing down from one generation to the other. But why would we care? It's the same moral dynamics that shuts down schools as it borrows money from kids or steals money from kids. The U.S. national debt has surpassed $30 trillion, according to the latest data released by the Treasury Department, marking a new milestone as government spending and borrowing continues to surge. Reading from FoxBusiness.com. The new record is for government's total debt outstanding, which includes the $23.4 trillion debt held by the public and another $6.5 trillion in intergovernment debt, such as China owning a lot of our debt. Spending by Congress was already increasing at a steady clip for years before the virus sparked a borrowing surge of $5 trillion in pandemic relief that accelerated the rate. Totally unnecessary, by the way. Senator Ben Sasse, who I have great disagreements with on Trump, actually has a really good statement on this, I have to say. Does Ben Sasse want to go to war with Russia? He's probably part of that whole group too. But $30 trillion is an obscene number. But what's even more depressing is the fact that most politicians in both parties really don't care. He's right. Someone is going to have to pay for that money when these politicians are long gone. And spoiler alert, it won't be paid by them, but instead by our kids. He says ignoring the debt won't solve the crisis. It will only make things worse. We need to cut budget busting spending sprees and do real entitlement reform. Trying to sound an alarm here. We're doing our best. We are trying to send out a distress signal for any citizens that dare care. And I know that you care and you feel helpless with that. Now, the question is, why is it that we continue to borrow and live outside of our means? Well, when you begin the process of what would be called a short-term debt cycle, there's only a couple ways to get out of it. So we started this short-term debt cycle in early 2000s. Post 9/11, we had a balanced budget, believe it or not, under Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton. We started the debt cycle, though, after 9/11, where because of the shock that 9/11 caused in the financial markets, then chairman of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, tried something new. He relaxed monetary policies. He said only temporarily. He made money cheaper to try and accelerate borrowing and spending to renew national morale after 9/11. And it worked. That Christmas after 9/11, because it was only a couple months after, had some of the highest consumer spending and some of the highest investment ever. that business people had seen to date. But what happened then in 2002, 2003, and 2004 is the same people that are wanting war with Russia right now, the Bushes, the Cheneys, the Schumers, the Pelosis, the Clintons, both parties, the Uniparty, as Senator Mike Rounds literally says in his statement, the Uniparty, war is expensive. And it's hard to go to war without having to borrow money. So that's what we did. We decided a ground invasion of both Afghanistan and Iraq simultaneously was the right thing for our country. Instead of rebuilding schools in Baltimore, Detroit, Minneapolis, San Francisco, and Portland, we decided to try to increase literacy rates for girls in Western Afghanistan. Instead of trying to rebuild water in Flint, Michigan, we decided to go rebuild the entire transportation grid in Iraq, displacing Saddam Hussein, over $1.4 trillion in just Iraq alone, thousands of lives lost, tens of thousands of veterans lost afterwards in PTSD, suicide, drug addiction issues, and hundreds of thousands of veterans that suffer from psychological damage, and a country that remains to be in basically the third world. America is not any safer because of the displacement of Saddam Hussein. It's not any better because of the displacement of Saddam Hussein. Same could be said, unfortunately, for Afghanistan. Afghanistan is precisely in the same hands as it was 20 years later. So war required deficit and debt spending. But then all of a sudden, Wall Street started to realize that, hey, lower interest rates means more money velocity, means that we can do merger and acquisitions at greater rates. We can build bigger buildings. We love this kind of low interest rate frenzy. So in 2004, 5, and 6, you saw the housing boom, largely thanks to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, thanks to the negligence of our own quote-unquote housing regulators, cheap money policies from Washington, D.C., buying up bad mortgages and incentivizing people to do the same. We built an entire economic model on a house of cards of people that were bar waitresses earning cash tips that had three homes, two of which they've never visited, because people were incentivized to go to low-income neighborhoods and sign up people for as many mortgages as they possibly can. We all know what happened next, which was the great financial crisis. Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, and for the first time ever, despite the insistence of Jim Cramer, those companies went under. In the years that followed, 2008 and 2009, our leaders were faced with a tough decision. You see, the 2000s saw an economic boom the likes of which we never thought was possible. Now, would our leaders decide to metaphorically take the cough syrup, tighten the belt, tell Americans that we're not going to indulge in this continual behavior of deficit spending and debt mounting on future generations? Of course not. Barack Hussein Obama won the election in the fall of 2008, was sworn in 2009, and Ben Bernanke, then Federal Reserve Chairman, Hank Paulson, Treasury Secretary, and Timothy Geithner, under Treasury Secretary, three awfully treacherous people, if you asked me, all decided, hey, let's just keep interest rates low. It's not like we're going to experience long-term inflation. And then we saw a stimulus package passed by Barack Obama, a then $850 to $900 billion stimulus package. It was passed as the National Recovery Act. After that, Obama passed Obamacare, a takeover of the American healthcare industry. Debts and deficits continued to soar. And then a couple years later, I started to get involved. When I first got involved in activism, it was in the years of 2011, 2012. I used to go around to Tea Party meetings when I was a high school student with my good friend Mikey and many others, and went to the local Tea Party groups with PowerPoint presentations warning Tea Party grassroots patriots that a $12.7 trillion debt might break the back of our nation, that it's a national security threat, it's an inflationary debt, that borrowing today is stealing tomorrow. I had all the one-liners down. $12.7 trillion, that was 10 years ago. In 10 years, our debt has increased by $17.3 trillion, way more than doubling, almost doubling and a half, actually, almost exactly. Now, we're in a tough situation because at every corner, our leaders, and both political parties, by the way, have decided not to raise rates, have decided not to cut spending, have decided not to raise taxes. I'm not a fan of raising taxes, but that's something you could do to restrict the money supply. And so now we're experiencing double-digit inflation, and we had the worst of all situations and scenarios. Shut down the economy, made people unproductive, they were full of fear, and you inject $5 trillion of new deficit spending into the economy. 80% of all dollar bills ever created have been created in the last 2 years. So our debt burden is so massive, it's so enormous, that the only solution that our leaders have is, well, let's just inflate our way out of the debt, because the more dollar bills you have out there, $30 trillion won't be $30 trillion anymore, because the proportion of the debt actually goes lower to the amount of money in the money supply. So our leaders have admitted publicly, and you just have to read between the lines, that the strategy is not to cut spending. It's not to raise taxes or to tighten the belt. No. We are engaging in a Venezuelan, Argentinian, Weimar Republic, Zimbabwe strategy. Inflate our way out of it. With all the noise surrounding the topics of money and the economy, today, more than ever before, you need a financial guide that you can trust. That's why I trust Pax Financial Group. Not only do they share my conservative values, they are committed to putting your interests ahead of their own. Big Wall Street firms are forcing their political agendas into your investments, and it's time to stop giving your money to companies that don't share your values or use their profits, my profits, as a way to silence Christians. PAX is proud to offer an alternative called BRIs, Biblical Responsible Investing. Look, I got to know the people behind PAX Financial at a pro-life dinner in San Antonio. I got to know them, and they told me about biblical responsible investing, and at first, I wasn't really sure what to make of it. But as I got to know the team behind PAX Financial, we agreed to partner with them here on The Charlie Kirk Show. Biblical responsible investing supports and promotes our values of being pro-family and pro-life, and screens out companies that support pornography or anti-Christian or anti-conservative. If you have $150,000 or more in investments, text them, Charlie, at number 74868. Text them, just Charlie, right now to number 74868. They'll be able to schedule a 15-minute free, no-obligation consultation. I'm moving some of my money over to PAX Financial, and honestly, I hope they do well with it with some of the returns, but I'm happy that part of my portfolio will be able to go towards biblical responsible investing. I think they're going to crush it for me in the market, but I'll be able to know that my hard-earned dollars are not going towards pornography, anti-Christian, pro-BLM nonsense. You'll be connected with a financial advisor who will walk this through with you. Text Charlie at number 74868 today. Invest in companies that don't hate you. Invest in companies that I believe are actually consistent with biblical truths. Go to Biblical Responsible Investing. If that interests you, text right now to 74868. Just Charlie in the body there. Check it out right now. Brought to you by PAX Financial Group, PAX. ZeroHedge.com. San Francisco residents flocking to Montana as demand has exploded. So it's tempting at times to want to recruit new people to your state. Now, the governor of Montana is a friend of mine. He's a terrific guy. He's one of the best governors in the country, Governor Gianforte. And I think he shares this concern. I certainly do. People from San Francisco are flocking to Montana, which has seen a 140% increase from San Francisco when comparing total moves from 2018-19 to 2020-2021, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. Kansas, that's a weird name. Dorsch, who's a Bozeman real estate broker, I love Bozeman, says, I have a vacation rental in Bozeman, and the demand from the Bay Area has exploded. It's become slam booked for the entire summer. Buyers were making phone calls. Buyers were buying properties sight unseen to get out of the Bay Area. During the same period of time above, overall moves from the Bay Area to Montana increased about 51%. Now, on the surface, it might sound like a good thing for economic development of Montana. I've actually spent a ton of time in Montana the last 10 years. A lot of time in Bozeman, a good amount of time in Butte, which is a mining town, good amount of time in Kalispell, a good amount of time in Whitefish. I love Montana. Hamilton, Montana as well, which is a separate valley right near where the show Yellowstone is filmed. I was going there far before that was even a thing. now. It's traffic there everywhere. It's because of that show, which I'm actually told is really good. Change in moves to Montana from California counties during the pandemic. San Francisco County is the top. So what's the takeaway here? Well, the takeaway is that Montana is a beautiful, conservative, constitution-loving state. Yet the left-wingers that have destroyed San Francisco because of the open defecation, because of the needles in arms, because of the crime, the robbery, the arson, the assaults, the shoplifting, and at times murder, where do they want to go? They want to go to Montana. Now, Connor, you live here in Phoenix. I'm seeing some big changes in Phoenix as well. That is not so good. Someone is not going to believe me, but that's okay. We had our Freedom Night in America at Dream City last night. Connor, did you hear what happened? You didn't hear this? Freedom Night in America. I have Mikey driving and Pastor David Engelhart in the back seat, and I'm fiddling around on my phone. We turn right on Greenway, and I kid you not, they will attest to it, drive-by shooting. Four shots. Never saw a drive-by shooting before. Called 911 immediately, and they will attest to it. Literally, as the car came by us, it was accelerating. They stopped. We kept going. Bang, 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 bang. It wasn't like a muffler. It was four shots. One, two, three, one. Phoenix is becoming more dangerous, unfortunately. And so is Montana. While San Francisco saw the biggest pandemic-era percent increase to Montana, all of 10 California's most populous counties saw move-outs to the state increase significantly. So you destroy California, burn it to the ground metaphorically, so then you want to go to Montana and Arizona to continue to spread the pathogen. States that saw the biggest increase in move-ins from San Francisco during the pandemic by raw numbers. And the fewer people are moving to California. During the pandemic, the rate of people migrating to California is at a record low and out of is at a record high. The net domestic California migration by quarter, do you know how many people are leaving California every 3 months? 200,000 people are leaving California every 3 months. 200,000 people. And the amount of people moving into it are at record lows as well. So, but here's my provocative take. The people of Montana should say, you're not welcome here. Don't bring your values and your Berkeley worldview to this untouched slice of God's country. They're going to destroy Montana. They will. They're good at it. The activist groups will infiltrate. The racial groups will, in fact, now thankfully there's some good conservatives like the wonderful governor of Montana, my friend Governor Gianforte. But if this is not addressed and this migration continues, they're like locusts. They will not stop. San Francisco, destroyed. Montana, they'll destroy that. Then they'll go to Utah. Then they'll go to Nevada. Then they'll go to Alaska. Whatever the last slice of heaven is, they will try to bring hell to it. Look, everybody, I know you love freedom and you want to defend it. And I know you love the Constitution. It's a beautiful document, and so do I. And it's the same with Hillsdale College, the best liberal arts college in America. Hillsdale's mission is pursuing truth and defending liberty. It gives its undergraduate and graduate students the best education and is working to make this education available to all, from offering free online courses to helping support K-12 schools. But today I want to tell you about Hillsdale's amazing free monthly digest of liberty. It's called Imprimis. Over 6 million households and businesses receive Imprimis for free each month. And you can join them by subscribing right now at charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charlieforhillsdale.com. There's no strings attached while you're there. Take an online course. Take their Aristotle course. Take their Winston Churchill course. Take their Western theology course. Generous donors who love freedom make it possible for Hillsdale to send you Imprimis for free. Imprimis is one of my favorite publications, and Imprimis means in the first place. It's short, smart, useful, and fun. Start receiving your own free copy of this great digest of liberty and take an online course while you're at it. Enroll. Their Great American Story course is incredible. Visit charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charlieforhillsdale.com. Check it out right now, charlieforhillsdale.com. So we locked down our entire civilization. We were not alone, but it certainly felt that way at times in saying that the lockdowns would have no epidemiological benefit. Lockdowns were one of the great government intrusions in private life that we've ever lived through. There was no reason at all whatsoever for it. However, we did it, and we continue to do it, and some parts of the world are still doing it. Some parts of America are somewhat locked down still, and Canada is largely locked down. Johns Hopkins, which is no fan of Western civilization if you actually study the history of Johns Hopkins, heavily influenced by German historicists in the 1870s and 1880s, they have a new study out that said that lockdown policies are ill-founded and should be rejected as a pandemic policy instrument. Before I go any further, this is just sad. And our leaders, they failed us again. A whole generation will be permanently impacted and damaged. You know how they say it's millennials, Gen Z? They're just going to call this generation the damaged generation. Really hard to disagree with that. A new study out of the renowned Johns Hopkins University has concluded that global lockdowns have had a much more detrimental impact on society than they have produced any benefit, while researchers urging that they are, quote, ill-founded and should be rejected as a pandemic policy instrument. But remember, they wouldn't have got mail-in ballots if it wasn't for lockdowns. They wouldn't have had Jeff Bezos' net worth double or Mark Zuckerberg, who's all about the wealth transfer to the billionaires while you got poorer to create $5 trillion, reintroduce it into the economy. If the economy remained open and lockdowns wouldn't have happened, maybe our national debt would be $24 trillion, not $30 trillion. Maybe Donald Trump would have won a second term. Lockdowns were not an instrument for the pandemic. We knew that all along. The lockdowns, they were an instrument for the Great Reset. The focus of the study, according to the authors, was to determine whether this is empirical. There's enough empirical evidence to support the belief that lockdowns reduce COVID-19 mortality. The researchers define lockdowns as any government mandate that directly restricts people's possibilities, such as limiting travel, internal movement, closed schools, businesses, and ban international travel. The researchers further noted that, quote, to answer our question, we focused on studies that examine the actual impact of lockdowns on COVID-19 mortality rates based on registered cross-sectional mortality data and counterfactual differences in difference approach. In other words, did lockdowns reduce COVID deaths? Their conclusion is no. Lockdowns have had little to no effect on COVID-19 mortality. More specifically, index studies find that lockdowns in Europe and the United States only reduce COVID-19 mortality by 0.2% on average. They add that the shelter-in-place orders were also ineffective, only reducing COVID mortality by 2.9% on average. Specific non-pharmaceutical intervention and PI studies also show no broad-based evidence to noticeable effects on COVID-19 mortality. In further analysis of lockdown versus no lockdown, face masks, closing non-essential businesses or border closures or school closures and limiting gatherings, the study also found that, quote, no broad-based evidence of notable effects on COVID-19 mortality. The epidemiologist added that every single poor person on the face of the earth has faced some sort of harm, sometimes catastrophic harm, from this lockdown policy. Will it be counting the catastrophic health and psychological harms imposed on nearly every poor person on the face of the planet for an entire generation? The researchers found zero, none, absolutely none, significant beneficial impact on restrictive measures when it came to COVID-19. We've known this all along, but they did it anyway. And the damage will live with us indefinitely. What's so incredible is we did it to ourselves. The smartest people in our society, they're never wrong. They did it. And they'll never really be held accountable for it, unless we make them held accountable for it through Nuremberg or other ways. And it also plays into the very same theme that we've been talking about, generational theft, stealing from future generations to benefit yourself with the time you on this earth you have remaining. I want to get to some sound here. Oh, by the way, we're day 688 of 15 days to slow the spread. for all of you keeping home, score at home. Okay, let's go to cut 53 here.
And if you have three doses of vaccine, remember the Israelis are now going to four. If you have three doses, so you have the booster, you have an even higher risk of being infected by Omicron than somebody that did not receive vaccine or received one dose of vaccine or received two doses of vaccine. So your risk of infection, on average, appears in some data sets from national governments to be highest if you've received three doses with Omicron. This is worrisome because it suggests that there are aspects of Omicron that may be being enhanced by something that is associated with vaccination.
Is the vaccine making things worse? Well, CNN is blaming Omicron for our jobs report. We missed about 500,000 missed jobs on the jobs report. Meanwhile, Monmouth poll says 70% of Americans are ready to live with COVID. You know, when we talk about the rise of the citizen, let me tell you, citizens must have good memories. You can't forget about this. This is one of the great injustices of modern civilization. But don't worry, America will become the first country to vaccinate babies as young as 6 months, as Pfizer asks for authorization to give the shot to children under five. Experts say it's not necessary because young people make up less than 0.1% of COVID deaths. But parents seem to be very, very engaged in vaccinating their children all the time, regardless of the circumstances. You know, it's just so interesting. I remember I used to get in debates with left-wingers I went to high school with and the first couple months of starting Turning Point USA. And at the time, I didn't think this was a good argument, but actually it really is. They said the problem with having these pharmaceutical companies is they're always going to be trying to make people either sicker or permanently dependent on their products because that's their business model. It is a sick care model, not a healing care or healthcare model. Pfizer and its partner BioNTech, with all their new billionaires, have officially submitted data to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to have its vaccine authorized for use in children ages 6 months to 4 months, 4 years old, to try to inoculate children against a virus that they are not even at even close to significant risk from. It would make the United States the only country on the planet to approve the Pfizer vaccine for children under five. Not to mention the vaccine adverse event report system of myocarditis, pericarditis, the problems with boosters. But now the vaccine lobby is pushing very hard to be able to vaccinate your six-month-old granddaughter. The vaccine regimen for young children will include two doses and 3 micrograms each. For comparison, the jab for 12 people and older is 30 micrograms, and the shot for kids 5 to 11 is 10 micrograms. But they need a third dose, according to the Pfizer CEO, Albert Bourla. Ultimately, we believe that three doses of the vaccine will be needed for children 6 months through 4 years. Of course, great business. Well, of course you would want that. To achieve high levels of protection against current and future variants. There's something happening here that's even deeper than what anyone wants to admit. Let's get to some more sound here. Cut 31. Students in some Virginia schools are being suspended indefinitely for not wearing masks as left-wing activist school boards defy Governor Youngkin's executive order. Play cut 31.
Every morning last week, from Tuesday until Friday, Stephanie Lundquist Arora escorted her three sons to school. Two attend this elementary, her oldest this middle school. None of the children wore masks, a violation of FCPS policy. She says it was their decision.
My sons feel that they should have the right now to not wear a mask, so I left it up to them.
Now all three boys trying to keep up with their studies from home. That's because they've been suspended day after day. FCPS considers their refusal to wear a mask a violation of the dress code.
A violation of the dress code. These adults one day will have to face justice for the abuse they put on our children. Despite natural immunity and all the treatments available and the low risk that COVID poses to children in the first place, let alone the low risk that Omicron poses, they want children to walk around like they're living in some sort of Middle Eastern marketplace. Meanwhile, 77% tested at Baltimore High School, they read at an elementary level. Baltimore City teacher came forward with devastating information that shows that 77% of the students that were tested at a high school, they only read at elementary school level. But don't worry, they're wearing masks all day long. They're wearing masks and they know everything about BLM. The teacher works for Patterson High School, one of the largest schools in Baltimore, with a 61% graduation rate and a nearly $12 million budget, to conceal her identity because they don't want this to be public knowledge. So the focus is on making sure that kids in school are wearing masks when 77% of the kids at a high school in Baltimore, they don't even just not read at grade level, they read at a kindergarten level. What they're doing all day in school, I don't know. So a lot to think about here. The damage done to our civilization in the last 2 years is just is beyond words. I believe we can overcome it. It's what Americans do. But you can't overcome something if you don't properly identify it. People have to go to prison for this. People have to be held accountable for this. Or else the country's just going to fall apart. It's just that simple. This is not... Cut 26, infectious disease physician Dr. Robert Colgrove admits that the mRNA vaccine might cause myocarditis in young adolescent men. Play Cut 26.
Why is Moderna's Spikevax still limited to adults 18 and older?
So I don't know anyone who uses that name either. But I mean, the short answer is that people, things get approved for exactly what they are applied for. And the companies are very careful to apply for indications where they've carefully tested. But in the particular case of the Moderna vaccine and the mRNA vaccines in general, there have been a very small number, a very low number of cases of myocarditis that have appeared in mostly young adolescent men. And so the FDA is looking very closely at that to make sure that everything is okay before going forward.
Yeah, but no, let's go vaccinate our six-month-olds, right? Cut 34, Virginia mom says Democrats' nonsensical COVID policies in schools have induced a lot of anxiety in her children. Well, it's by design. Play Cut 34.
But our physician said, this has to come off. So when we returned to school, we presented the note. There was no pushback. He went in. And parents are not allowed in the school. So we handed the note. He got out of the car with the note, and he went on. So when they called us, you know, at the end of the day, they had removed they had put a mask on him and told us they would not honor it. So now he polices himself. And there's a lot of anxiety that comes with the damage is done.
All of this surrounds the question of justice. What is right and what is wrong? This is why a classical education is imperative for your children, and why we partner with Hillsdale. If your child cannot tell you what is right and what is wrong, you are not properly equipping them for the world. Well, Senator Ted Cruz asks that out of one of Biden's court nominees. It ties directly into masks on children, by the way. I want you to listen to this. We don't have a ton of time, so I don't have time to really build up to it the way I would like to, but I want to make sure we get to this. It's one of the most important pieces of Senate commentary I've seen in quite some time, and good for Senator Ted Cruz for leading on it. Play Cut 52.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations to each of the nominees. Judge Cotto, I want to start with you. Is racial discrimination wrong?
Senator, our Constitution prohibits race discrimination on the basis of race.
Okay, let me ask again, is racial discrimination wrong?
Senator, as a judge, I don't deal with issues of morality or whether something...
So you have no views on whether it's right or wrong?
Senator, because that is an issue that is frequently litigated before the courts pursuant to Canon 3 of the Code of Conduct...
Okay, so why does the Constitution prohibit racial discrimination?
Senator, I think it's part of our Constitution and this nation's history of aiming for equal justice and treating people, regardless of any protected class status, equally and fairly.
So discriminating based on race violates, I think you just said, our Constitution's history of aiming for justice. Is that a fair characterization?
Senator, our case law, if you're talking about race discrimination under the law, yes, pursuant to Supreme Court precedent, race discrimination under the law is prohibited.
Now, of course, she went to Harvard and she went to UCLA. She says, well, I'm not one to say who's right and wrong. You're a judge. That's what you do. And she's basically saying it's code for, I'm not going to tell you the beliefs I actually have. I'm going to be subjective in my rulings. What is just? What is right? What is wrong? Well, according to Kenley Kiyokato, who is a United States District Judge for the Central District of California, who's a nominee to serve on the U.S. State's District Judge, she can't say whether or not racial discrimination is wrong. She doesn't have an opinion on such matters. Murder? Who am I to say? Theft? Come on. Incest, adultery, arson, rape, pillaging. Supreme Court precedent might say that, but you see, Supreme Court precedent might not matter to Kenley Kiyokato. And then she goes on to say, well, the Constitution might allude to it. It's a yes or no question. And isn't it amazing they can't even answer whether or not racial discrimination is wrong? Because guess what? They don't believe it's wrong. They believe racial discrimination is just to try to make up for racism of yesterday. It's the new doctrine of the left. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.